podcasts are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And, you know, Bitcoin is in a little bit of a hot water these days. Mm-hmm. One of their main sites was shut down for drug dealing. We'll talk about how that's going to affect Bitcoin. And and we recently had the Grace Hopper Celebration of Women in Computing.
Oh, really?
They have that every year. It's quite a nice event. We'll talk briefly about that later in the show.
And if you've listened to the show for a long time, you'd know who Grace Hopper is.
That's right. I'll refresh everybody's memory on that. And now, if you've been watching the new studios of Fox News, you'll see these giant monitors that Shep Smith has. We'll talk. These look like giant. They're 55-inch touchscreen monitors. First production crew. We'll talk about the technology behind that. It's an interesting story, I suppose. And NSA just loves Google Chromebook because, you know, you're always hooked up to the internet and they can just track more stuff. We'll talk about the latest Google Chromebook, the pluses and the minuses. And I'm going to talk about this, how Elon Musk, who, of course, is the CEO or CTO of SpaceX, is using hand gestures to design rocket parts and then 3D printing them.
Huh.
It's actually quite interesting to watch the video. I'm going to give the link to the video. But we're seeing, actually, an evolution of technology as more and more things are coming along. And this week we're going to feature the co-founder of Microsoft, not Bill Gates.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to feature Paul Allen. Now, when Paul and Bill worked together, Paul Allen was known as the idea man, and Bill Gates was known as the man of action.
Ah.
So we're going to feature the idea man today. And, of course, it was a giant,
huge,
giant mailbag.
There's a letter in your mailbag.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's the one thing here that's not virtual. The mailbag is an actual mailbag.
It's an actual mailbag. And so even we talk about such weighty topics here on Tech Talk that even emails are very heavy.
Exactly, yes.
Because they're weighty. Mm-hmm. We got an email from Dick Mondro in Florida. I had an email from him last week. He says, thank you for your help in blocking pop-up ads. We talked about that last week, how to block pop-up ads. The host file from mvps.org did the trick because he was trying to get rid of them, and I gave him that host file that he could possibly. That was actually the third technique. So apparently the third technique did the trick for him. He also wanted to get the Tech Talk podcast in his Chrome browser, so he installed the Google RSS reader as recommended, and now he can actually listen to the podcast right within Chrome, which is very nice. And he did talk a little bit about Weirsdale. Remember that?
Yes.
He says, well, Weirsdale did sound a little weird to me about 10 years ago, but I felt compelled to let you know after 30 years in the military and as a pilot, another 12 years in living in Michigan, where I got my doctorate and taught at the Big M University, I began looking for retirement, and I found the 6 acres of land beside a private airport in Florida, and it's in Weirsdale, and it's named after the 9,600-acre Lake Weir.
Mm-hmm.
It's fresh water, and it was once home to Gator Joe, the 15-foot, 7-inch alligator that lived in Wake Weir in the early 1900s. Thank you again for an excellent tech show. Dick Mondro from Weirsdale, Florida, U.S. Air Force retired.
Well, thank you for your service.
That's right. Thank you for the service, and thanks for the email. I always like to know when stuff works that we recommend here on Tech Talk.
You know, and it's funny because now that he mentions it, Lake Weir, I didn't realize it was that big. That's the lake you see when you're on approach to Orlando Airport. You come right over Lake Weir.
Okay.
Okay, anyway, not that that matters.
There we go.
A hill of beans.
Okay, we got an email from Steve in Potomac. Dear Doc and Jim, your practical advice on how to deal with PC problems is so helpful. I'm already excited about your show in a couple of hours. course. I got this email this morning at 6 a.m.
Uh-huh.
He knows that I'm working on the show.
He does, because, you know.
Okay, but then he says, can you suggest a way to get rid of pop-up ads that are littering my PC and have made it slow? Thanks, your loyal listener, Steve from Potomac. Okay, Steve, you didn't listen to the show last week.
Uh-huh.
just go to the October 5th show and have all of the techniques. And basically, you can set up pop-up blocking in your browser. You can uninstall extensions that sometimes create pop-ups. Or you can install a host file, which Dick Mondro just talked about, that you download from mvps.org. And all those details are on last week's show, the October 5th show. But thanks for your email, and thanks for listening.
Yes.
We got an email from Mary. Dear Tech Talk, I work as a tech writer in a transportation firm in the D.C. area. To my amazement, I'm still using Windows XP. This just makes life challenging. Now, my current issue that I'd like to know if there's a way to do spell checker with an Adobe Acrobat 11 Pro, either built-in or as a downloadable add-on. I'm currently using Adobe Acrobat Pro a lot and have not found a good spell checker yet. I did find one via Google, but it was for a Mac, not a Windows. Thanks, Mary. Well, there is a built-in spell checker, Mary, but it only checks the comments. It doesn't check the underlying PDF. And I couldn't really find any good options for checking the underlying PDF. I did find a script that'll run as a batch file, and it will do spell checking on a batch of PDFs. I'm going to give a link to that, and you can just go to the Tech Talk website and pick up that link. But he's charging $85 for it. And I haven't tested it, so I don't know that I could really recommend it. I'll give you the link so you could check on it. Now, what I actually do when I want to spell check a PDF, I just get the PDF extension for Microsoft Word. There's also a PDF extension for LibreOffice or OpenOffice if you're using open source software. And then you can just import the PDF file into that using that extension and do the spell check within the word processor. Mm-hmm. And it's not quite as convenient, but it's cheaper. So that would be my recommendation for you. I don't know why Adobe Acrobat doesn't spell check the PDF. There's been a lot of complaints in the Adobe discussion groups about that. But, you know, maybe they'll come up with that later on.
Okay.
We got an email from Sophia in Woodbridge. Dear Tech Talk, I just got a new iPad and want to prepare MS Office documents on it. Are there any options? Thanks. I love the show. Well, you do have several options, Sophia, to run programs that are similar to Word, but not as rich as Word, as similar to MS Office, but not as rich, feature-rich as MS Office. Now, the documents in these particular options can be stored, say, on the cloud, say, using Dropbox would be what I use, actually. Now, actually, I have two programs. I have several programs. I just downloaded them all because I just wanted to kind of test them for Tech Talk. I did this some while ago. I've got Docs2Go and QuickOffice for my iPad. Now, they each cost about $10, and it's a complete office suite with the PowerPoint equivalent, the Word equivalent, and the spreadsheet equivalent. And I've got QuickOffice. Docs2Go and QuickOffice, they each cost about $10. And they integrate directly with Dropbox. Of the two, I kind of like Docs2Go a little better, but they're both fairly convenient. Now, Apple also sells their versions of Office, but they don't sell it packaged up. You got to buy it separately. They sell the Word equivalent is called Pages, the Excel equivalent is called Numbers, and the PowerPoint equivalent is called Keynote. But they sell each one of them separately for $10. So to get all three, it's $30.
Okay.
So I also ordered those. But actually, I like those better.
And you can use them on your iPad.
Use them on the iPad, yeah. Huh. And so I actually use Pages. I use Keynote a lot to read all my PowerPoints. That's really quite good. It doesn't have all the PowerPoint features of the latest PowerPoint, but it has most of them. It's not quite as feature-rich. And so that would be $30. So if you just want to go with a native application, those would be your choices. And I would probably go with the Apple versions, Pages, Numbers, or Keynote. And then I would use the cloud storage.
What do you think about what is the Apple word processing? I forget the name. We've talked about it before on the air. They're the Apple version of their word processing program.
That's Pages. That is the Apple version.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
There was a problem with it this past week. Did you hear that? There was something that the people that are trying to use it on their iPhone or something like that are getting the blue screen of death when they switch over to it. And apparently there's no fix for it yet. I just happened to hear a blurb about it this week, but I wish
I don't know. I actually haven't picked it up. I haven't had any problem with it. I'm using them both. I'm using all of them.
Cool.
Now, if you want to have an actual real Microsoft Office running on your iPad. Now, there is a way to do that, and I'm going to tell you about that. It's a little bit more complicated, but you can actually do that. You see, Microsoft Office is going to release a version for the iPad, but not until they release a version of Office for the Microsoft Surface.
Ah.
And once they allow Surface to get good market share, then a little bit later, they're going to bring it out for the iPad. So they're playing these competitive games.
Mm-hmm.
So the only way to get real Office, this would be actual Microsoft Office running on your iPad, is using your iPad as a thin client, where you basically have Microsoft Office running on a server and you just display the page. And there are two services where you can operate Microsoft Office in a thin client mode. One is OnLive Desktop, and the other one is Cloud On. And you can download both of these applications. And they basically operate in the freemium model. They're free. You download them, and you can get 2 gigabytes of storage. And I like actually OnLive Desktop better. It looks really like a Windows desktop. Cloud On is a little bit clunkier. But OnLive Desktop, it looks like a Windows desktop. You click on it. Of course, you've got the touch screen, so you can open up Windows, PowerPoint, or Excel. And I'll tell you, it's just a native application running there. And it's the latest version of Microsoft Word or latest version of PowerPoint. Now, what they do, though, the response time is just a little bit slow because they got shared servers there. So if you want to get, like, super quick response and you want to get more than 2 gigabytes of storage, they, of course, want you to get the subscription at $5 a month. So they get you in for free. They get you hooked on it. And so I'm going to think if you really like that, if you really do want to have the full version of Office and Excel because you want to get all of the features, you're probably going to want to go to one of those thin clients. And if you pick, we got Live On Desktop and Cloud On. I like Live On Desktop the best. And so... Mm-hmm. And you try that free for a while. If you like it, you could just pick up the subscription for $5 a month. Now, the one disadvantage, of course, it's a full version of Word, but there's no mouse.
Ah.
So you have to use the touch screen. And so the Word is really not, I mean, it's, so you can touch it, and I guess you can highlight. It's just not quite as convenient as with the mouse.
Gotcha.
And I could not find a way to get the mouse to interact with it. I'm sure... There must be a way to do that, so maybe I'll do some further research. Because, like, if I'd get a Bluetooth mouse, I could connect a Bluetooth mouse to the iPad, assuming that you've got a mouse driver. And so, technically, there should be a way to do it, but I just didn't figure it out yet. But now that I've got this bug in my mind, I'll work on that, and I might have an addendum to this letter next week.
Have you had your hands on a Surface yet?
No, not yet.
I guess then you really couldn't answer the question, but I was wondering if you could do it all over again, would you go with the Surface or would you stay with the Mac?
Well, I like the iOS operating system better than Windows 8.
Oh, okay.
For a touch screen.
Uh-huh.
See, the problem with Windows 8, it's like they designed it as a traditional desktop with a mouse or as a touchpad. And it's not optimized for either.
Okay.
And so it's like Microsoft didn't know what they were doing.
Okay.
And so whereas the iOS is just purely touch.
Right.
And it's all integrated with touch. It's got all sorts of motion, you know, sort of gestures that work with it. And the Office just isn't that sophisticated yet.
Mm-hmm.
So they really should have forked the operating system and had one that was purely for touch, one that was purely for mouse, and not tried to mix them. I mean, if you look at Apple, they've got a Mac operating system, and that's not to be confused with the iOS operating system on the iPad. Apple didn't try to get one operating system that worked for both.
Sure.
Apple did.
Uh-huh.
And that's why they're having trouble with sales.
Ah.
So it's really a lack of clarity in their vision in the design, and that's why I don't like it as well.
So actually, you can answer the question. You wouldn't go near a Surface.
No, I wouldn't. And it's and it's not really the technology. The Surface technology, I think, is as good as the iPad technology. Mm-hmm. It's the operating system, and it's clarity of vision. Microsoft, under Ballmer, has not had clarity of vision as it relates to mobile devices.
Mm-hmm.
And they're playing catch-up. Now, maybe in a couple of years, they'll have that clarity of vision and they'll have an operating system that looks good. But I wouldn't get it at this point.
Wow.
Which is why I don't have... I guess I did kind of play with it at Micro Center or something, but I can't say I've really spent much time with it.
Sure.
Okay, we got an email from Hawken Bowie. Dear Tech Doc, I posted a wall post on my friend's timeline and noticed that I made a few spelling errors and wanted it deleted or removed. But then when I clicked the remove button in the upper right-hand corner of the wall post, the only option was it said none.
Mm-hmm.
It literally says none. I tried everything, but it says, sorry, this page isn't available. It's strange, but the wall post is still up and I want it deleted. When somebody posts... But, I don't know what to do. When somebody puts something on my wall, I can delete it. I just can't delete it on their wall.
Sure.
What's the glitch? Well, this is the glitch. You cannot edit your friend's page. You can only edit your own page.
Mm-hmm.
So the only way that this can be removed, and I hope that you didn't say something totally inappropriate that's just hanging up there.
Mm-hmm.
The only way it can be removed is you have to give them a call or send them an email and ask them to delete it. They can delete it.
But you can't.
Now, they actually can't edit it, I don't think, but they can delete it, and then you could repost it if you'd want. So you're going to have to mail them a request. And in the future, what I recommend is that before you hit send, read your post.
Always a good idea.
Read the post. Now, you can, on your own website, on your own page, of course, you can always delete it. You can always edit it. You can edit it right away, but if you let it sit there for a while, the edit option goes away, and then you've got to delete it. You just can't edit it. So it's a good question, and many people have that problem. We got an email from Heather. Dear Tech Talk, I have two websites, and I'm worried about getting them infected. You know, we hear about infected websites with all kinds of viruses. What should I do? Both sites are just HTML and are uploaded using FTP. Thanks, Heather. Well, it sounds like you've got a static website, meaning it's just HTML, and that you're uploading it just straight FTP. That's file transfer protocol. That's a TCP/IP protocol. FTP, file transfer protocol, is the way that you can upload files to a server. And in that case, since it's a static website, the typical ways that people infect it are not going to work for them. So, but you've got to make certain you've got a good password, and you want to keep it secure. Because if a hacker gets your password, they could simply start FTPing stuff into your site. They could change your files, and that's really how they would do that if they could crack your password. But that's not the most common hack. The granddaddy of all website hacks is SQL injection. Now, that's when you've got a website which is dynamic and it pulls data out of a database. Yours is not that case, but if you would have that, like if you have a blog like WordPress, that's basically all the data stored in an SQL database, and then the WordPress front page is basically accessing that database. And in the case of WordPress, SQL injection would work if it wasn't protected. Now, SQL stands for Structured Query Language, and it's a database programming language. You've got commands like, you go through, and if this condition is met, delete these files. If this condition is met, do that. If this condition is met, display that. So you can actually access the database and give it all kinds of commands with structured query language. Now, here is what SQL injection is. If people are sloppy when they create the web page, suppose you've got a form that you have to fill out, and they don't clean up the data before they send it to the web page. So suppose you put in your first name and your last name. And if they don't scrub the data, and you simply put in, say, the first name field, an SQL executable command, then when it takes and inserts what it thinks the name is into another command, you've already got an executable command, and all of a sudden you've taken over the database with your executable command. That's called SQL injection. So what you have to do is you've got to sanitize the input. And so this is where most of the website hacks occur. The inputs are not sanitized; they're just sort of put together quickly. They work very well if you put in proper input, but if you put in improper input, they're not. It's not scrubbed. Now, content management systems like WordPress, which are SQL-based, have had to seriously harden themselves over time against these kind of attacks. And WordPress is getting much, much, much better. There have also been bugs that allow SQL injection to occur on purely content sites. So if you're using a CMS or any CMS, keep it up to date. Because as people discover more and more attacks, they'll fix them up. So one thing, if you've got a CMS system, content management system, CMS, you want to always keep it up to date. And one final note, you should really back up your site daily. I mean, I'm certain you do that. We back up ours more than once a day. So if you really get hacked and they do serious damage, you can simply restore to the last time that the site was clean.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good question.
Yes.
I'm glad that you're thinking that way. It'll probably protect you quite nicely in the future. We got an email from Jim in Kansas. Dear Doc and Jim, I've contracted for 100 megabits per second internet connection from my internet service provider. The maximum speed I can get, however, is only about 30 megabits per second through Wi-Fi. When I connect the router to a LAN cable directly with my laptop right next to the router, I get about 80 megabits per second, which is close enough to me. What's up? I don't really understand this. Thanks, Jim in Kansas. Well, Jim, 100 megabits per second is actually faster than most Wi-Fi standards. Now, the earliest Wi-Fi standard, 802.11b, was actually only capable of transmitting at 11 bits per second. You know where that number came from, 802.11?
No.
There's a standards committee, and the first time the standards committee met was February 1980. So that's where the 802 came from.
That's funny.
The 11th standard that this committee has released is 802.11, and that's the Wi-Fi standard. So that's an IEEE group. I don't know how I got off on that.
And that's kind of a sidebar.
That would be an official sidebar, yeah. Mm-hmm. So 802.11b, which was the first one that came out, is actually only 11 megabits per second. And in reality, you never get the full 11. You get maybe 8 megabits per second. They had a more recent standard, 802.11g, which is 54 megabits per second. But actually, you never get 54 megabits per second. You typically get around 30 to 35 megabits per second. Because what happens is you get collisions with these packet collisions, and you can't go normally at the fastest speed. And so you probably are sitting there with 802.11g on your wireless, and you're getting 30 megabits per second, which is about what I would expect. Now, if you get the latest standard, 802.11n, it allegedly can go up to 600 megabits per second. But that signal strength really matters in that case. You've got to be quite close. Now, what could slow your 54 megabit per second down? Suppose your neighbor has a Wi-Fi in the same frequency band. You're going to have to share the frequency, man. That's going to slow down your effective bandwidth because you're going to be colliding with his packets, and you can't transmit both at the same time. So you got to wait for him to finish his transmission, and that effectively slows you down. Also, if you have mixed devices on your Wi-Fi, like suppose you've got one laptop with 802.11b, which is 10 megabits per second, and another laptop with G, the entire wireless system goes down to the slowest speed.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be the case. Now, what I do because I don't want my neighbors to slow my internet connection down.
No, that can't happen.
You see, there are actually 11 channels on these wireless, 1 through 11, and they're only three non-overlap. It's 1 through 11, but there are only three channels that are not overlapping. It's like 1, 6, and 11, because it's kind of a wide bandwidth, and so the adjacent channels overlap. So I'm either on 1, 6, or 11. So what I do, I check what channel my neighbor is on. Like if he's on 6, then I make certain I'm not on 6. I'm going to be on 1. So I've got two neighbors, so I check what they're on. And I set the channel on my Wi-Fi so it's at a different frequency than my neighbors, so they don't slow me down.
So how do you check? Is this used for the Cantenna, or you just break into the house and see what they're up?
No. I actually have a net stumbler, and it tells me.
No human interaction is needed here.
I downloaded a program called Net Stumbler. I put it on my computer, And it tells me whether they're encrypted, gives me all kinds of information about their network and everything. If I need it.
If I need it,
but I rarely need it. I'm trying to keep the neighbors out of my network.
See? Exactly.
So I always have encrypted networks so my neighbors don't use my bandwidth. So we got an email from Craig in Oakton. Dear Tech Talk, the other day we were looking at a website and we're hit with this virus, System Progressive Protection Virus. And we didn't even click on a link. And we immediately shut down the machine. And when I went back on the internet, I found what seemed to be a reasonable site describing how to get rid of it. After many attempts, I think we got rid of it. But how did I get this virus? You know, through the firewall. And I'm also running Microsoft Security Essentials. Thanks, Craig. Well, Craig, the firewall actually doesn't protect you against viruses. The firewall protects you against internet-initiated connections. If somebody from outside your network tries to get into your network by connecting with your computer using a port where they know there's a vulnerability, that incoming connection was not requested. Your firewall knows that, so it blocks it. Now, and there's a lot of malware that's constantly trying to connect to random IP addresses, and you'll probably get your firewall is probably hit with external attacks. I'd say 10 per minute. They're just very, very all over the place. But the firewall is very good at protecting against that. This particular case, you actually requested the web page, so it was a request and it was sent down. And so since you requested it and it's a response to your request, the firewall is going to let it come through. Now, what happened is your Microsoft Security Essentials is actually doing real-time scanning as the virus is coming down, and it will detect a virus on the way down. Now, that assumes that you had real-time scanning turned on. Now, maybe you didn't. You may not have had real-time scanning turned on, in which case it was fully enabled. But if you had real-time scanning turned on, it should have caught it before it was actually installed on your computer. Now, it also could be that you don't have the latest version of Microsoft Security Essentials, you know, because they'll release new malware. It's like a cat and mouse game. They release something new, and then Microsoft comes up with the signature for that new one, and then they update it. So you might have gotten some malware that was very recently released, and Microsoft Security Essentials had not been updated yet, and it just made it through the system, didn't detect it. I don't know which one that is. So that means you've got to make certain to also keep your Microsoft Security Essentials updated. So you want to keep your antivirus, anti-malware software updated, and you want to adjust it for real-time scanning. And then that's about the best you can do. But I think you did a very good job. Once you realized that something had gotten in your machine, turning it off was very smart business. That's the way to do it. I do that, too, if I ever get caught in that situation.
There you go. Well, Doc, you're not just, you know, presiding over a classroom of the airways over there. You're doing other things.
Oh, no, yeah. I am monitoring the Facebook page for Tech Talk Radio. Simply go to facebook.com/Tech Talk Online. I'm monitoring the show real time to see if you've got any comments that we would like to share with our audience.
And of course, you are listening to the Classroom of the Airwaves, Tech Talk Radio, brought to you by Stratford University, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. We will have more coming up right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Application and software developers shape our world. Those who design and build these systems are the leaders we follow. The School of Computer Information Systems at Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers programs with a real-world, hands-on education. In fact, many of today's Stratford IT grads are working in their chosen field. Make it work for you. Stratford University. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. a rewarding future as a holistic caregiver or nurse practitioner. Combining the art of caring with the human science makes nursing today's breakout field. Stratford University's School of Nursing at the Tysons Corner or Woodbridge campus offers a patient-centered approach with valuable core clinical training. Stratford provides a real-world education in nursing. In fact, many of today's Stratford nursing grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're going to feature Paul Gardner Allen. His mother called him.
Yes.
He is best known as co-founder with Bill Gates of Microsoft. Paul Gardner Allen was born January 21st, 1953 in Seattle, Washington. While attending Lakeside School outside Seattle, the 14-year-old Paul Allen met the 12-year-old Bill Gates, a fellow student and computer enthusiast. And that is where the first meeting occurred. When Bill Gates was 12.
Amazing.
They used Lakeside's teletype terminal connected to various mainframes to develop their programming skills. After earning, get this, a perfect score of 1600 on the SAT, you know, Paul Allen was a sharp cookie, wasn't he?
It certainly sounds that way.
He went to Washington State University, but he dropped out 2 years later.
This is a common theme.
To work as a programmer for Honeywell, and he moved to Boston, Massachusetts. It turned out that Bill Gates was going to Harvard at Boston, so they were together again. Allen convinced Gates to drop out of Harvard in order to create Microsoft. So we had two college dropouts started Microsoft.
So this Allen being the idea guy, this was his first idea,
that
right?
was his first idea, and then Bill Gates was the man of action.
Mm-hmm. So dropping out.
That's right. So Allen and co-founded Microsoft with Bill Gates in Albuquerque, New Mexico in 1975, and they began marketing a basic programming language interpreter. Basic is a programming language developed to teach programming, and a lot of the computers back then were using it, like the old Commodore, and also Apple. So they actually sold that basic programming interpreter to Apple and also to Commodore.
I wonder why they picked Albuquerque.
I don't know. I was wondering about that.
Not exactly Silicon Valley, is it?
No, it doesn't really make sense to me. I couldn't figure that one out. Allen was the one who came up with the name Microsoft, because it was software and microprocessor put together, Microsoft. He talked about that in a Fortune magazine article. In 1980, they promised to deliver IBM a disk operating system. This was the big contract that actually set them on the thing. But actually, they hadn't developed it yet. But they promised to deliver it, and it would have to run on the Intel 8088-based IBM PC. So they said, so Bill Gates, the action man, said, yeah, we'll deliver that baby to you. And he came back to Allen, and he said, Paul Allen said, yeah, but we don't have it. Bill Gates said, well, I'm the action man. You're the idea man. Get it. So Paul Allen arranged for Microsoft to buy an operating system called QDOS. That was the name of that was Quick and Dirty. That's short for Quick and Dirty Operating System.
Uh-huh.
So QDOS, they bought it from Seattle Computer Products, get this, for $50,000.
Wow.
It was written by Tim Patterson. I've read some articles by Tim Patterson. He said that was really the worst thing, the worst deal he's ever done in his whole life. Sold the operating system that actually became the basis of the huge Microsoft success. He sold it to Paul Allen for $50,000. Now Gates and Allen reinvented QDOS as MS-DOS. They renamed it QDOS as Microsoft DOS. And installed it as the operating system for the IBM PC, and of course the IBM PC dominated the market after its release in 1981. Allen was known as the idea man and Gates as the man of action. Allen was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma in 1982, and he had three or four months of chemotherapy, and he was cured of it that year. So he was diagnosed and cured the same year. It was really quite amazing. But after that scare, he never did return to Microsoft, and he began distancing himself from the company. This was in 1982. Let's see, when did they started the company in 1975, and in 1982 he left. That was 7 years. As Microsoft grew and its stock steadily rose, Alan's share in the company co-founder made him a billionaire when he was just 30 years of age. he resigned from the Microsoft Board of Directors in 2000, but he continued to consult with the executive team there. Alan began to concentrate on other projects, hoping to find the next big idea. And so he founded Vulcan Ventures in order to research possible investments. In 1992, he founded a Silicon Valley think tank called Interval Research. Through Interval Research and Vulcan Ventures, he began to put together his long-term dream of a wired world society where everybody was online. So he said, well, the internet's got to go. I want to be part of the big internet thing where everybody is connected. So he invested in all of these companies that were focused on that. And he was one of the initial investors in AOL, for instance. And he invested in all sorts of online companies and actually did quite well with all of that. From 94 to 98, he built an infrastructure of well over 30 different companies in pursuit of his wired world strategy. Paul Allen holds 43 patents from the U.S. Patent Office. In 2007 and 2008, he was listed as one of Time's 100 most influential people. He also he's got a wide-ranging activity. He owns a couple of he owns some professional sports teams. He completely owns the Seattle Seahawks.
I had no idea.
Which are an NFL team, and he also owns the Portland Trail Blazers, which are an NBA team, and he's part owner in the Seattle Sounders, which is a soccer team. In a report in February 2012, Allen was named as the most charitable living American in 2011, his donations totaling more than $372 million. Allen's memoir was released April of 2011, titled Idea Man, a memoir by the co-founder of Microsoft. So he ended up being worth probably $15 billion or so.
Wow.
And as the same thing happened to Bill Gates, he reached a point in life and he wanted to give back. So now he's focused primarily on his charities now, mm-hmm. and just like Bill Gates is. So the two guys that started Microsoft, Paul Gartner Allen and Bill Gates, had a great idea, swiped the operating system, somebody would sell them for $50,000, turned it around, sold it to Microsoft, and through great showmanship and marketing, they were able to build Microsoft from that small beginning.
I think I may have the answer to Albuquerque.
Okay.
According to Wikipedia, they were interested in getting Microsoft installed in a computer, and they were meeting with these guys from a company called Micro Instrumentation and Technology Systems, or Telemetry Systems, and they were based in Albuquerque. So they had to go to Albuquerque to sell these guys that their operating platform was worth it. So that's probably why they wound up there.
Yeah.
But that's a weird place.
It's a weird place. You can see they didn't stay there for long.
No, they didn't.
Yeah.
Nope, they didn't. Well, I hope you were paying attention because you have your chance in just a few minutes. In fact, like a minute to win a free prize from us here in the pop quiz on Tech Talk Radio, heard every Saturday on Federal News Radio. 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. Stand by, the pop quiz is next.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Technology is constantly changing. An effective IT manager must not only understand the possibilities and limitations of the technology, but also the requirements and constraints of the business world. Enhance your career today with a master's degree from Stratford University School of Computer Information Systems. Classes are offered day, evening, and weekends to match your busy schedule and are taught by experienced faculty members with industry experience. Earn your master's degree in as little as 15 months with an accelerated program in software engineering, information systems, information assurance, or telecommunications. Learn more about earning your master's degree from Stratford University at stratford.edu or call 1-800-444-0804. Disclose statements available at stratford.edu/disclosures. Stratford University, 1-800-444-0804.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Yes, this is not a radio show.
No.
This is a classroom of the airwaves.
Never has been.
That's right. So earlier in the show, I was talking about Paul Gartner Allen. He, of course, is co-founder with Bill Gates of Microsoft. What was the original town in which Microsoft was established? What was the town where Microsoft was established? If you get the right answer to this pop quiz question, you win two tickets to fine dining at the Escoffier Dining Room.
Well, you got to get the answer to us quickly, and that would generally involve using the telephone. So dial these 10 digits in the right order to get to us. If you're calling from west of Seattle, Washington, it's 877-936-9333. From east of Albuquerque, New Mexico, it's 877-936-9333. And everybody else can dial us on the wild card line, which is, of course, 877-936-9333. 9333.
Yes, if you're going from Kurdistan, you can reach us by Skype. Simply go to Tech Talk Radio 1, and you'll be forwarded directly to the radio station free of charge.
But you could use 877-936-9333 from Kurdistan if you use the international dialing code, right?
You could, but it would cost you an arm and a leg.
Okay, you win.
That's right. So we certainly don't want to do that.
No, we don't.
Well, earlier this month, we had the Grace Hopper Celebration of Women in Computing. And this was held in Minneapolis, October 2nd through 5th. And this is the largest event in history that they've ever had. They had 4,500 women in attendance. Now, the Grace Hopper Celebration for Women in Computing is a series of conferences designed to bring research and career interests of women in computing to the forefront. The Grace Hopper Celebration is presented by the Anita Borg Institute for Women in Technology and the Association for Computing Machinery. In 1994, Anita Borg and Tella Whitney founded the Grace Hopper Celebration of Women in Computing with the initial idea of creating a conference for and by women. Borg and Whitney met over dinner with a blank sheet of paper, having no idea how to start a conference. They started a plan. The first conference was held in Washington, D.C. in 1994 and brought together 500 tech women. 10 conferences have been held since then. It's named after Grace Murray Hopper, who was a computer scientist and a U.S. Navy Rear Admiral. She was such an exceptional woman, they called her Amazing Grace. She was one of the first programmers of the Harvard Mark I computer and developed the first compiler for a computer programming language. She conceptualized the idea of a machine-independent programming language, which led to the development of COBOL. She's credited with popularizing the term debugging for fixing computer glitches because she actually had to remove a moth from a computer which was shorting it out. So she had to debug the computer. So there you go. And I looked at many of the videos on the Grace Hopper celebration. It is inspirational for women to attend this because many times they just work with men in all the teams. But when they all get together, they realize that they are a force to be reckoned with, and they really are inspired to be together at this conference.
We don't have a winner yet. We've stumped everybody that's called in. So the question again is,
what city was Microsoft founded in?
Right. And it's not one that you would think of.
Yeah.
For technology. The number is 877-936-9333. 877-936-9333. So, Doc, how about the Shepard Smith's big giant touchscreens?
Yeah. You know, they had the big giant touchscreens. The Fox News released a video detailing a new television set that included a number of analysts sitting in front of giant touchscreens. Now, these screens measure 55 inches and run Windows 8. It's running Microsoft's PPI display technology that came from its acquisition of Perceptive Pixel in July of 2012. I guess that's Perceptive Pixel Incorporated, PPI. And so they're running the Perceptive Pixel technology. Microsoft, through its acquisition, is now the OEM of some of the largest touchscreens in the world. They even have one that goes up to 80 inches.
Wow.
But I guess that was just too big for Shep.
You can't reach the top, right?
For Shep's studio, yeah. So according to Shep Smith, Fox News can toss images from any of the displays on air as they wish. And they've got a giant wall screen. They can throw them up to the giant wall screen. According to Microsoft, the multi-touch screens cost around $7,000 for each 55-inch model.
Wow. That's
so
pretty amazing.
Microsoft is very proud that they actually made it into the studio. It's a great debut for their new technology.
That's pretty cool. We are just about to get I think somebody may have the correct answer as soon as that comes up on the screen here. We can play the pop quiz. And yes, we can do that right now. Let us go to line number one. This is Jim, who is calling us from Vienna, Virginia. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Good morning. Well, indeed.
Okay, Dr. Schertz, please ask the question.
Earlier in the show, I was talking about Paul Allen, of course, co-founder of Microsoft. Where was Microsoft founded? What city was the original founding city?
It was founded in the city, the hardest spelled, the word to spell in any city in the United States, I think. Just remember, it's pronounced Albuquerque, and you will spell it right.
Very good. Excellent.
It was a long way to get there, but we do have the winning answer.
That is the correct answer. You win two tickets to fine dining in the Escoffier Dining Room. Thanks for listening and getting and entering our Classroom of the Airways contest.
Jim, thank you so much. Hang on just a second. We're going to switch you back over to adjunct professor for prize distribution and asset management back in the other room. That's a new. He asked me if we could do that, Doc.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so Andrew Mitchell is now taking care of important business. We will be back with more business very shortly. This is your Classroom of the Airwaves, Tech Talk Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. More of Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Budget analyst, a vice president of sales. These are today's business leaders, and a degree from Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers you a powerful path to navigate the corporate world. The School of Business Administration at Stratford University offers both bachelor's and master's degree programs for a real-world education. In fact, many of today's Stratford business grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. An executive chef at a trendy restaurant, a hotel general manager at a prestigious resort. These are the high-profile positions in the culinary arts and hospitality management industry. Get working towards your bachelor's or master's degree at Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus. In fact, many of today's Stratford culinary arts and hospitality grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. European cloud users may start avoiding the U.S. cloud.
Really?
Yes. The European Union policymakers were skeptical about the safety of their corporation's data in the public cloud. But they began to accept it until the existence of PRISM which, of course, is the NSA program for scooping up data that was revealed by Snowden.
Mm-hmm.
So the lawmakers in the European Union are now attaching broad amendments to the 2012 set of digital privacy regulations that could, if enacted, severely curtail and even outright block EU businesses and private citizens from using the U.S. cloud-based services. Now, there are several proposed amendments to the privacy regulations, including prohibiting the transfer of EU corporate data to U.S.-based clouds altogether. The new proposed regulations would also sanction European companies that ignored these rules and used the U.S. services anyway. The actions taken by the U.S. intelligence agency threatened to completely unravel the relationship between the European Union and the U.S. Previously, the EU had more or less allowed data to be stored in the U.S. cloud as long as the companies agreed to abide by EU privacy rules. But all that's gone out the window with PRISM. EU technology vendors are also pushing to have more cloud availability from their sources in their native countries. So they view this as a real opportunity. U.S. vendors are alarmed because it could be a big drop in U.S. cloud revenue. Now, Bitcoin users are a little bit upset with the FBI after the Silk Road seizure. Bitcoin users are retaliating after the FBI seized their digital currency as part of its case against the underground marketplace Silk Road. Hmm. The FBI took down the Silk Road website and froze over 26,000 bitcoins. So Bitcoin is worth about $100, so that would be $2.6 million. $2.6 million worth of bitcoins. And they froze these bitcoins that were being held for customers as they made their transactions with Silk Road. FBI put these bitcoins into a separate holding address blockchain. Angered by this action, the supporters discovered the FBI's wallet details, the information necessary for performing transactions and sending public messages, and they began posting protests and making very small transaction with the seized bitcoins. You see, the FBI knew how to put it in a wallet. They didn't know how to stop transactions. Silk Road was an underground marketplace for many people, and it was used for drug-related and other illegal activities. The alleged owner, Ross Ulbricht, was arrested last week with charges for drug trafficking, computer hacking conspiracy, money laundering conspiracy, and for allegedly hiring a hitman to kill an employee.
Yikes.
So this is some
heavy stuff.
Yeah, Silk Road used both the Tor network, which is a peer-to-peer, the Tor network is the anonymous proxy server system that had been set up by U.S. Department of State, and Bitcoin as a way to keep transactions anonymous. The digital currency's value took a steep dive after the news hit, so it's probably not worth $100. Bitcoin's probably worth less than $100 now. Now, Bitcoin's appeal lies in the fact that it's anonymous, untraceable, and unregulated. These are the very attributes that make it appeal to a broad range of speculators, investors, entrepreneurs, and the criminal underworld.
Of course.
Including drug traffickers, terrorists, or anyone who wants to circumvent tax regulations. The coins are mined or discovered using computers and math, because Bitcoin does not rely on a centralized authorities for administration. It appeals philosophically to a certain segment of society, libertarians.
Mm-hmm.
It represents the spirit of libertarianism, free, unfettered, uncontrolled. The same attributes that make Bitcoin attractive to those anti-government philosophies also make it the perfect currency for illegal transactions. So the saga of the Bitcoin continues. But it's an interesting mathematical construction. Why does NSA love the Google Chromebook?
I don't know.
Well, it turns out you're online all the time. It's sort of like, why does NSA love your iPhone? You're online all the time. They can track with GPS where you're located. They got the metadata for what phone calls you make. We're actually sort of giving up our privacy. Well, Google And Intel announced a new group of upcoming Google Chromebooks based on Intel's Haswell architecture. Now, this is the new high-speed architecture that Intel's releasing. And so with the new Haswell architecture, these are going to be machines with much more capability. The idea of a cloud-tethered notebook, it means that you're always on the cloud because you've got to be on the cloud in order to do anything because you're driving all your documents, all your applications are on the cloud. So that means that they can always tell exactly where you're located because thanks to Verizon, when you're connected to the cloud, no matter where you are, they're giving up that data at NSA. So NSA can pinpoint, even though the Chromebook doesn't have GPS, mm-hmm. they can tell where you are by where you're connected to the cloud. And so the Haswell system will make many of these advantages for a high-speed processing much better. See, Chromebooks are really designed to allow users to do more than you can do on a tablet. Like the tablet, it's really hard to do applications. Sure. You don't have a mouse and a keyboard. So the Chromebook is really designed to be a step up in terms of usability over the tablet. But in order to be really usable over the tablet, you need to have higher speed processing, which is what this Haswell chip will do. But revelations about the NSA and the FBI's prisons programs have added doubts, particularly outside the U.S., about the wisdom of putting everything on the cloud. So until people figure that out, and actually until Google can find a way to encrypt data on their servers where only you control the encryption key, I think people are going to just be a little bit uneasy Fort Meade, of course, NSA headquarters could get it all. But I'm thinking the solution is going to be encrypt everything on the cloud so that it can't be de-encrypted even if somebody does get the data. Okay, Elon Musk is doing a 3D printing of rocket parts. Now, wow, this is really interesting. Cool. And there's a video which is at entrepreneur.com, and I'll give it the link to it. What he does, he uses gestures. So he's got the rocket engine there, Elon Musk, of course, is CEO and Chief Technology Officer of SpaceX. He's also the CEO and chief product architect of Tesla Motors. So he likes to design things. So he had the design of the rocket engine there, and he was like moving it around with his hands. And you watch it in the video. He basically modified the curvature on one of the parts just by moving his hands around. No computer screen, no keyboard, nothing. And then when he was finished, he sent it to a 3D printer, and he printed out the part in titanium. So this 3D printer would lay out this titanium powder, and then after it laid out the thin layer of titanium powder, a laser would come back over, and it would melt the powder to make thin metal.
Wow.
Then another layer of titanium powder, and so it built up this titanium three-dimensional rocket piece by piece. Mm. And it actually is a new way of doing manufacturing whenever you're developing things. It's quite impressive. Look at this YouTube video. I think this portends the future of where we are heading with technology.
That's pretty amazing. Yeah, you know, Doc, the old clock on the wall,
we're almost out of time. Listen, we love your emails. We want you to email us with us. We like a full mailbag.
Yes.
Email us to techtalk@stratford.edu. You can also sign up for the Tech Talk podcast by going to techtalkonline.com. You can sign up for the podcast. Every show back to the year 2000 is actually posted on the web. Or you can go to Apple iTunes and sign up for the podcast. And finally, go to Stratford.edu website, check out the programs, and let them know that you heard about them at Tech Talk Radio.
If you tuned in late or would like to hear this program again, it will replay here on Federal News Radio at 7:05 tomorrow night. See you next week.
Commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
And, of course, we have Navy football action on the air later today. The Navy midshipmen travel to Durham, North Carolina to take on the Duke Blue Devils. You can hear Pete Medhurst play-by-play beginning at 11:35. Cloudy, rainy around the area. Right now, 60 degrees outside our studios in Northwest D.C.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated.